This is Rafflebix After Hours.
No, it's good morning from us, but it could possibly be good afternoon or good evening to the rest of you, our audience. Welcome to episode 128 of Rack Addicts After Hours, a music and technology podcast. My name is Ben. Peter's here with me in Rack Addicts Towers, as always, surrounded by quite a selection of the synthesizers. We've got Pete's live rig on a giant pedal train, the Scarab, and a little skiff, and also, over in the distance, a Korg Lambda. What a lovely place to be podcasting about things often involving synthesizers. How are you doing, Pete? What have you been up to this week?
What have I been up to? I have been staying in central London and sort of enjoying the weather, if you can really enjoy it properly when you're in a large city.
Yeah.
And I was taking in the atmosphere of the Borough Market, if you're familiar.
Nice. Indeed.
And imbibing the overwhelming sensory overload that place can generate.
It's quite a thing.
Yes. So I was striding around the place, looking at all the things, looking at all the cheeses.
Oh, yeah.
All the strange fish on display and all the other more exotic produce that you don't normally see in supermarkets. Markets or even other markets, let's say.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Did you encounter any unusual vegetables a fruit? The kiwano. That's a favourite of mine.
I certainly did. There was a place called The Turnip.
Oh, yeah.
And they are housed in one of the areas that looked like it was originally a greengrocer's from 18-something or other.
Wow.
And there was also a very posh restaurant located inside the greengrocer's, which was strange.
It's quite interesting.
And I did see some very bizarre fruit and vegetables that I had to sort of ask what they were.
Yeah, they're always quite fun. Dragon fruit looks especially scary.
Yeah, there are some very spiky things in there. Also, there was a spice and salt shop, I want to say. Mm. When I say salt shop, I have never seen so many varieties of salt.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that could be that many varieties. Think of something, some sort of food, and then mix it with salt.
Oh, yeah, one of those. Maybe it says something about the kind of people we are. My partner and I do have a selection of salt for various occasions at home as well. The good one is that there's a seaweed salt, which is quite nice for things.
Things, what, sushi and that type of thing?
Yeah, often sushi. What did we put it on the other? Oh, yeah, actually on fish. It's quite nice on fish.
Yes. What did I see yesterday? So orange salt, lemon salt.
Interesting.
Red wine salt.
That is weird.
I mean, it was literally anything. I mean, obviously all sort of the usual suspects, garlic, various other herbs and spices, et cetera, but yeah, there was all sorts of salts. And I didn't come away with much. We did dine there because there was many eating experiences.
Yeah.
And also we came away with the usual sourdough loaf.
Ooh,
and some really excellent almond croissants.
Ooh, nice. It's been a long time since I've had the real French deal. Something else. Have you made croissants before?
No.
It's quite fun. It did take me 3 days last time, but if you have 3 days, it's good fun.
And I assume that is it preparing the pastry for baking, because obviously the baking's only going to take
most of it's just waiting, because you're, you know, folding, proving, waiting, fridging, folding again, waiting some more. Yeah, it's good fun there.
So like a lot of things, it's all in the preparation.
Indeed.
So basically that was it, just promenading up and down the south bank of the Thames.
Ah, nice.
Checking out the Borough Market and usual gazing on the Globe Theatre, which is the recreation of the
original Globe.
The original Globe, the Shakespeare Theatre. And there's also the Tate Modern, which is the modern art museum in the large generating, what was it?
It must have been a power plant at some point.
Yeah, I'm not sure what period. I think it might be 1920s, but it's completely made of brick.
Yeah.
So it's one of these scheduled buildings for its architectural design.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the weather was nice. There were several, what they called mudlarkers, on the foreshore of the Thames, searching for artifacts.
It could be all sorts in there.
Yes, it was hot and wonderful.
Yes, indeed. And supposedly hotter and wonderfuler today. day. Us Brits will have to survive 30-something, and we're not happy about it.
Well, most people don't have air conditioning in the UK.
No, I don't know anybody but you with a mobile air conditioning unit that's sitting in here with us. Yes.
I think today I'm going to have to break it out and get it going, because I have got a long day in the studio and it gets rather warm in there.
Indeed, a toasty place. Nice one. This week, I took my partner to our very first big screamy angry metal show, which was quite exciting. At the very end, I might as well have played rugby, to be honest. I was a bit battered and bruised. Since we ended up at the edge of the mosh pit the whole time, because you couldn't really move anywhere. And yeah, just trying to sort of elbow people back in as they sort of fall on top of you, and as the entire crowd shifts, trying not to fall over and stay upright while supporting each other around you so they don't fall over. It was a more physical experience than I might have wanted, but it was good. The band Spirit Box, who we were there for, were excellent, and this was the O2 Academy Islington, and I do know that the sound quality improves with the importance of the act, let me say. So the first one, I'm pretty sure they always set it on the desk at some point and just walk off, because it's always terrible. For the drums, it's a small venue, so it's only just above what I think is called sound reinforcement, where you just put a little bit of, maybe a tiny little bit of drum effects in the PA, and then the rest will be vocals and guitars and such. In smaller venues, that's what you do. But here, you can use it in anger. But for the first act, all we had was a bit of from the kick drum, and couldn't hear the guitars. And because it's screamy metal time, all we heard of the vocals was kind of that kind of noise.
Okay.
So it was awful.
How did your other half receive it?
Well, she thought they were terrible, because they were. The second act were marginally less terrible and their sound was better, but we didn't know them or really care. Mostly it was just a good couple of hours waiting for the band we actually wanted to see. And we'd tried to turn up later and miss all the preamble, but unfortunately we caught the entire thing. But she definitely enjoyed the act we went for, but probably also could have done without the physicality of the experience.
Yeah, that's not everyone's cup of tea, is it?
No, and it was when I was a university student. I'm not sure I'll bother again. I prefer a seated experience, to be honest.
Yeah, I much prefer watching live music seated.
Yeah, that's how it's been for seeing Big Train, Genesis, Phil Collins, all of these sort of bigger artists that I really want to absorb properly and appreciate. So, seated for me, please. So, Spirit Box, good stuff. Painful. I maybe want seated next time. That's the summary. At the office yesterday for work, I probably won't tell you what the shoot I was preparing for was, but I got to spend the day just playing with cameras, which was kind of cool. That being the latest GoPros and making sure they were up to date and on using the apps and all that. But more interestingly, one I think is called the DJI Action 2. So if you imagine the GoPro Session, you know that cube?
Yes.
Slice that in half in one dimension, it's about that big. And then it has a little backpack that kind of magnets on with an extra screen, more battery and SD card space and such.
I wonder if it's been designed for FPV.
It would certainly fit quite easily on a drone. It's because it's obviously even smaller than the Session, which I think people have been using, is very impressive. I think we'll be using it because it's magnetic, there's a situation where we can easily magnet it through a shirt for a point of view shot. So it might be something to do with this kind of action, which I'm miming. Is that a good mime?
Well, is that a driving mime? It's driving a car.
Yep, that's that might be happening. And I also made friends with a Shein, I think might be how you pronounce them, Chinese brand, one of their gimbals called the Weeble S.
The Weeble.
So yeah, played with a bit of a gimbal. There's going to be a Sony A7 on that. Lots of GoPros to look after that new DJI thing. It should be quite fun.
So the Weeble, is that named after the Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down?
I assume, because it's quite funny. But yeah, that was cool. I'm not normally a camera person, so it's good to learn more things.
Does that happen often, the sort of selection of new small action cams are brought in, or is it just a one-off type of thing?
Well, they get used occasionally for various things, but our GoPro arsenal was a bit out of date, which is why we bought two of the new ones. And since the shoot will involve small spaces requiring small cameras, that's why we've also gone for the really teeny tiny one.
The GoPros would have been 10s, I would imagine. 10 blacks?
10 black, yeah. And then we've got, I think, a 7 and a 5 as well. Those will be the sacrificial ones, which will be in slightly more dangerous locations.
I have been considering getting a 10. It's got internal stabilization.
It's using really impressive stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's all CPU driven, isn't it? It's not physical. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether I prefer physical stabilization to in camera, but obviously in camera is a lot more convenient.
I think they might even have a bit of mechanical stabilization just for the, you know, the vibration-y type stuff.
Okay.
But then for the big movements, it's absolutely going to be CPU driven.
Well, it sort of crops the outside and straightens it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it do. So that's going to be cool. I may update once I've figured out if I can or not. There is also very exciting Q121 news today, but I probably won't share anything until there are concrete bits. Just to tease you, there's very exciting things happening.
Ooh.
Wonderful. The last bit of my weekly update will be tomorrow is going to be a thing. So there's a company in the bike packing world called Restrap from somewhere north of here in the UK. And every year they organise the Solstice Century Challenge. So that is ride 100 miles near enough to the longest day of the year. And that's this weekend coming. They do it for the nearest weekend. Everyone who enters will get a little sew-on patch for their trouble. Either way, that's the thing. I'm going to attempt to cycle 100 miles tomorrow.
In this heat?
Well, it's not this heat. I think it's only 29. So, yeah, going to need a lot of water. I can carry 4 litres on me and the bike, but I will still probably want a refill at some point. And I'll, of course, need to bring a lot of food with me for that.
So, when you say on me, are you using a camelback?
I have a little hip pack, bum bag, fanny pack, which has a 1.5 litre bladder in it.
Okay.
And then I can do another almost 2.5 on the bike, on normal bottles.
Bottle too. You're going to need it.
I'm going to need it. So, wish me luck. We'll see. If I make it, there's an organised ride that I'm going on in the morning with Alpkit from their new shop in Kingston. And then I'll make my own way randomly around the paths.
So is there a specified course for this? Or are you just going to clock the mileage up?
Yep, so you'll just have to record it on a GPS device, as most people do. And you can do road, you can do off-road, however you like, as long as you get to 100 miles. And then they'll enter you in a raffle for a prize. But everyone gets a little patch.
All right, I was going to say, once you've done your 100 miles, what does it mean? But you now told me.
That's it. Wonderful. Now, two small nuggets of synth news. Let's go for the smaller one that you probably might have overlooked with the excitement of the other one. Do you know nanomodules?
I don't believe I'm familiar with nanomodules.
So they have quite a juicy filter called the Font, as well as others. Do find the DivKid demo of the Font, because it does sound pretty cool. But they've moved away from modules and have a case are out. It's called Caixa, I don't know. C-A-I-X-A, relatively impronounceable, all in capitals. I don't know if it stands for anything. Either way, we're talking 104 HP, 4U, and the 1U row is pre-populated with quite a great selection of utilities. So if you think of the Create Audio Nifty Case, the Make Noise CV Bus, can't think of any off the top of my head, but cases with a pre-loaded 1U or extra utility thing. Obviously, the IntelliGel ones, you have to kind of buy your own. They have, as far as I can think, a pretty inferior array of modules to this new nano offering. So let me read you the headlines. You have balanced inputs module, which has 3.5 and 1/4 inch jacks, 1/4 inch jacks on the back, buffered multiples, precision adder, a pair of LFOs, sample and hold, a stereo mixer, and stereo headphone out module, and the headphone output also has 1/4 inch jacks on it. I think that's quite an impressive array for your cash. I'll tell you how much cash that might be later. In terms of power, of course, it's one row, is 104 HP, and you've got, they also have quite a fun video, which looks like someone's had a good time with 3D software like Blender. So, 30 watts, you have 1.25 amps on the plus 12, 1.1 amps on the minus 12, and half an amp on the 5 volt, which I think is quite good, especially for just a row. It's not too much. You have 47 millimeters of space above the bus board for your modulars, and 18 connectors on there, though of course you can add more with a little flying bus if you need. And I think that's quite cool. It has a little handle on the top. Carry case is available. It is on Thomann for £555, which isn't too terrible considering the preloaded modules if you're comparing it to the IntelliGel offerings. I think it works out as quite a decent deal. Yeah, let me show you the picture, Pete, so you can get a good looker at it. I think it's aluminium in construction. May we be.
Oh, yeah. Handy carrying handle.
Indeed. It's always quite good. Swish.
Is there any sort of lid, or is that it? It's just an open skiff type.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lid. Let me have a look at the case. It's considerably bigger, the thing.
The case.
I wonder if you can fit two in there or something.
Does look that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, they say it's just space for power supply cables and other accessories. But I would have preferred it maybe like a little form-fitting one where the handle of the case protrudes out the top and just a bit of plastic inside the lid to keep the module's faceplates safe. Either way, I think that's cool, and I always like a new case option on the marché. So yeah, we'll find out one day maybe how it's pronounced. C-A-I-X-A. Kaiser. Kaiser. Yeah, nobody knows. Anyway, the big one. This week. Pete, do you want to take this one away? I've got some notes here, though, for the details.
Yes, again, is this one of these ones that we had some...
You had the prior warning, which I haven't had
did.
For
it was,
ages.
It was completely embargoed, and we actually had piles of the units stacked in the back of the store to go. As soon as the starting pistol was fired and hopefully the excited rush would begin. People boring into the shop going, I must have one of these new Moog Mavises.
Ooh, yes.
So, what would you describe it as? A rehashing of that previous kit thing?
Yeah, a bit of a development on the Werkstatt or Werkstatt.
It's a very similar in the respect that you have to build it, but I think they've added a few interesting aspects, not least the wave folding.
Indeed, definitely a departure for the Moog world.
But the ability for the unit to be Eurorack mountable, which they've taken that on board, which is a good thing.
Definitely good.
Certainly going to make it a lot more appealing. So this is the new Moog.
I guess it's their entry point synth, really, isn't it? It's
yes,
the
I
cheapest
suppose.
One they do since the Werkstatt has gone. Yeah, no, definitely the cheapest one.
Yeah. And what sort of prices have you seen?
$349 in some places, but let's see if we can get a UK number. 339 in the UK. It's not too bad at all.
Okay, yeah, that's slightly better. I mean, we're going to see a variety of prices sort of fluctuating as all the online retailers are looking sideways at each other.
Indeed. So, let's give you the speckaroonies. 24-point patch bay. You have an analog oscillator with PWM, and it's a waveform mixing style one rather than a switch or whatever. A mod source option, which will be envelope and LFO. VCO, not VCO, VCF, classic 24 dB styly, Moog sounding, hopefully. You have an LFO, which does audio rate, a full four-stage envelope generator, and then a wave folder, which is pretty interesting and does, I think, give a lot of mileage to this particular synthesizer. You've got offset, multiple, and a DC-coupled mixer. Sample and hold in there if you want it as well. And it does have a squishy keyboard sequencer situation.
Yes, I'm not sure about the keyboard.
Ooh, wait, does it have a sequencer in it? Ooh,
no.
Let me just check that.
Not at all. There's
no.
There's no...
Indeed, just a keyboard for squishing.
Yeah. So I think that possibly might it not have been better to put something like a little USB connection in it so that you could just plug a MIDI keyboard into it?
Or at the very least, I think actually what would have made more sense for this one is the 3.5mm DIN dongle. I think that would, like they had on the Subharmonicon.
Yeah.
That would have worked.
What, a MIDI?
Yeah, a little 3.5mm MIDI.
Yeah, anything that you could have done an external keyboard, because I'm not sure how useful that little...
Yeah, it'll be just as terrible as the Mother 32 experience. experience.
Well, it's the same keyboard, isn't it?
Yeah, same thing.
So it's a bit of, if the Verkstat and the Mother 32 had a child, this is it.
Yeah, a horrifying merger of the two. But yeah, that WAV folder, I joked on the ModCaf Discord when somebody posted it in there. A WAV folder, truly groundbreaking, never seen before. Because, of course, I mean, it's a WAV folder. But it does add a lot of mileage.
But it's in a Moog.
It is in a Moog, which is, ooh, are they doing something different? No way. So
it does add quite a lot of other flavours into the mix.
No doubt. It does sound pretty cool.
I mean, the campaign behind this has been quite vigorous. I can't think of anyone that hasn't been given one of these by Moog to shout
Indeed.
About on their YouTube channel.
Yeah, and they've done a bunch of, I think, their little cardboard patch things and sound design and pre-release video type content with Lisa Belladonna?
Yes.
Yes, I think that's the name.
The
Let me just double check.
Slightly gothic lady that does the Moog stuff.
Ooh, yeah, and she had that really cool system which was like Matriarch and then something stupid like 12 of the like the Mother 32's DFAMs and stuff. That was quite a cool video. Yeah, no, I'm sure it was Lisa Belladonna. I don't know where that video's gone, but that was pretty cool. They did another one with a few artists. You had Acemo, something, and Arushi Jain, and Night Jewel. Ooh, and also Silent Servant, which was quite cool. A few different styles in there.
Were all these Moog videos?
Yeah, this was on their channel.
Rather than all the usual suspects?
Yeah, rather than the independent type, reviewery, send them a thing, hope for the best situation.
I see they even gave Heinbach one.
I'm pleased with him sort of coming up the rankings in manufacturer's eyes, because I do like his perspective on things. What was his headline on this one? Heinbach. The budget Moog, he says. The budget Moog. More complex than its size suggests.
I think as this is actually a complete voice, it's quite a good Eurac option.
Definitely.
If you perceive it in that frame.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think what I was checking is how it lives in the price comparison world when you're thinking about the West Pest and the
East Beast
from Create Audio in Pittsburgh. Are more like the 214 world of pricing.
Mm.
So
they're even more attractive.
Yeah, and you have, I think, a more playable buttony keyboard because they're clicky rather than squishy, and you have a sequencer and stuff built in.
Yes, so
it's got that Moog tax on it.
Yes.
For sure. But yes, it's still a good option.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's a shame they couldn't have done it for something like $299, just got it below that $300 euro pound.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it will come down in half a year.
My experience of Moog, they tend to go up.
Do they
up.
Not? Oh, yeah, that's true. Anthony from the ModCaf has a Sub 37. Is it the Sub 37? Yeah, he was sort of thinking, do I get rid of it? Because it has appreciated quite a bit. And actually, our colleague Harry, because he had a Sub Fatty, I think, and he definitely sold his for a profit.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Well, I think all the Moogs that I've owned, apart from the Mother 32 when I sold it, have increased in value.
Not too bad. A good investment, then.
Yes.
Much more tangible than the finance world. At least.
Well, possibly, but I mean, one doesn't go into buying synths and thinking about the investment.
No, unless you have a time machine and you go buy all the
classics.
All the classics. But no, that's a cool one. And now I'm staring at the Create Audio West Pest and other stuff and thinking I want to buy synths again. No, Ben, stop it. Not until you have tons of money, which will not be for many, many years. Anyway, there's the news. Go listen to it because there's loads of demos from all of your favourites, and I do think it sounds rather nice. And I'm sure, given that you can get a kit for the DFAM to put big knobs on it, I'm sure you'll be able to overcome the trim pot syndrome and make it a little bit more playable.
What I've done with my Korg SQ1 is get clear knobs.
Oh yeah, of course, because they light up, don't they? So you can see it through.
Yes.
Nice.
But you can actually, if there's any text or something that might be obscured by the knob, the clear ones make it a little bit more...
That is smart.
Easier to see what's going on.
Yeah, let's see where the writing is on these ones, because that could be a good hack. Yeah, it certainly could be at risk. So clear ones. Good tip from Pete there. Thank you very much. Right. There's the news. The news is over. Done and finished and over and done with. So, that means it can only be one segment left. You know what it is. If you've listened to this one before, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. No, there's an N on the end. I knew that. I've actually got one.
Far away.
Which is media, and potentially physical media, depending on how you like to digest your books, on the recommendation of my second ever boss from the craft beer and wine place I used to work at, which was one of the best jobs I've ever had because we just drank on the job and it was amazing. Anyway, he lent me Leviathan Wakes by James A. Corey, and it took me 4 years to get round to reading it, potentially. And actually, it was Luke. Luke from the podcast, with the spacey bit that we haven't had for a while. He encouraged me to actually get into it, because it is the stuff. Really, really great. And I've just got into the really juicy bits of the sequel called Caliban's War. And in fact, this is the series that The Expanse is based on. Which, who made that? Is that an Amazon thing? Is it a Netflix thing? Because it's not on Netflix at the moment.
I think Amazon took it on because it had been cancelled at a certain level of series. And then Amazon picked it up again and ran with it.
Gotcha. Well, I need to check it out, because I've heard good things and I'll be able to judge it whether or not it lives up to the books. I didn't get too far into Foundation, but I do want to give that another go. Anyway, the books, if you're thinking of reading, Leviathan Wakes, Caliban's War, it's good stuff. And thankfully, there's even more for me to get into after that. What's the series? Oh man, there's 8 of them. Good stuff. I'll be busy for a long time. But there we go. That's my recommendation this week, Pete. What have you got?
Right, I was thinking that we really should have a subcategory to our weekly multimedia recommendation.
A subcategory?
Called,
okay.
What has Pete found on YouTube this week?
Oh yeah, well, we can make a jingle for that. What's he done now?
This week on YouTube, I have found a rather esoteric little channel by a Polish gentleman whose name is, hopefully I won't hose it up, Paweł Zadrzok. I'll start again.
Oh man, this sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Paweł
Zadrzokski.
Let's give it a spelling for us, then we can find it.
Yeah, there it is. Paweł is Pawel.
Could be Pavel.
Pavel, yeah, let's...
Not too sure.
Yeah, most probably is Pavel. And then it's Zadrozniak.
Oof. Oh dear. We're so sorry.
Zadrzokski.
I have no idea.
So how did you say the Paweł?
I think it might be Pavel. Other than Pavel. That, I've got no clues. Now you can find him, and we're so sorry.
Anyway, we got there eventually. Right, this gentleman has created a thing he calls the Floppertron.
Oh, what a classic.
So, in simple terms, what it is, he's got a load of the mechanical parts from old PCs and other mechanical peripherals that go with PCs, and he's sort of deconstructed them and incorporated them into a musical instrument, which he, I assume, has written custom code. So to get something out, the many, I think there's something like 250, but certainly many 1.44 inch floppy drives.
Yeah, there's quite a wall of them in some of these videos.
Yeah, so the code seems to just sort of fire them up and get them to initialize simultaneously. They make a kind of clickety clack sound.
Yeah.
And then he's got some hard disks which he's removed the cover so that you can see the actuators and the disks. And
he uses those for percussion quite a lot, doesn't he? Get little arms clacking.
And then he's got some flatbed scanners which have been stripped out, and then you could hear the sort of grind of the mechanism as the scanning head moves up and down. And this all does this to programming that he sets up for various different classics, let's say, that he performs with it. Yeah, it's one of the more stranger corners of the internet, let's say. He does also have his own website, which you can link from his YouTube page, with a kind of running blog that he's doing on the development of the instrument, the Floppertron. And he's currently at the Floppertron 3.0 at the moment. So I would recommend his channel. That is, how would you pronounce it?
Who knows?
Who knows?
You've got the spelling, so you can you'll be able to find him, and we won't embarrass ourselves anymore. Nobody knows.
I just can't. Sorry, Paweł.
We tried. Wonderful. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours. We will catch you in the next one. Stay safe and farewell.